and a happy new year to everybody out there in WJMS Radio Land. This is your man Steve. We're here. It's the first Monday of 2020. Yes, that's right. We made it through the new year. We're facing a new year, a new decade, and all kinds of challenges and adventures ahead of us. And we're going to be right here with you on it throughout the year here on Fired Up. To give you a little bit of background in case you're new to the show, Fired Up is a political discussion show where the subject is politics, but not the politicians, unless they play an integral role in the story that we're covering. There are a lot of sources out there to get information and hear from the political candidates. I really didn't want to add to that symphony, but I did want to have a show that really dove into what makes our political system work or not work, as the case may be. And that's what this show is about. What we do is we look under the hood, we look behind the curtain, we dig into the mechanics, the engineering, and the structure of our political system here in the United States of America. Well, having said that, we just came through 2019, ending the decade of the 2010s, and man, oh man, did we have a lot of political activity going on. Of course, the 800-pound gorilla, the big topic of the year, is the impeachment process going on in Washington right now. And we've talked about that over a few episodes of the show. We'll delve into it a little bit more as it progresses forward. But just as a status update, right now, the articles of impeachment, and there are two of them, have been voted on and accepted by the House of Representatives. And there's debate, discussion, and disagreement going on between the House and the Senate over the format of the trial for impeachment for President Trump. We figure out exactly how that process is going to work. And, you know, as I talk about a lot, we talk about a lot of the games that get played in the name of politics in this country. And this illustrates, you know, one very big one going on. Basically, the House is saying that they are not going to hand over the articles of impeachment to the Senate for trial until the Senate lays out for the House and for the American people how that trial is going to progress. And there have been a lot of partisan back and forth going on with, you know, the Republicans who happen to control the Senate arguing with the Democrats who happen to control the House. And, you know, arguing about whether or not basically a fair trial is going to occur. And, you know, this is a problem. This is a huge problem because whether you are on, you know, the president's side or you're on the Democrat side opposing and trying to prosecute him, the hope is that the impeachment trial will follow the processes laid out in our Constitution as described and detailed by our founding fathers, in that it will be a fair and impartial hearing of the facts and a decision based on those facts as to whether or not the president is, you know, removed from office or, you know, some other punishment they may vote to hand down. So by having this bipartisan wrangling going on with, you know, one side saying that they are in fact in communication and going to collaborate the defense of the president with the White House, and the Democratic side from the House of Representatives saying they are not going to hand over the articles to the Senate until they get a formal commitment on a fair and impartial hearing, including, you know, calling additional witnesses, examining the facts in a fair and impartial way, and hopefully arriving at a duly processed judgment one way or the other, whether they vote to impeach or they vote to acquit, you know, through a fair process. And as we are the American people watching this proceeding go on, it would seem logical to us from our vantage point that we do want to see a fair process go forward. Whether you, as I said, are a supporter of the president and believe that, you know, there are no grounds for him to be impeached, or you are, you know, in opposition to the president and believe that he has violated two key elements of his constitutional duty and therefore should be impeached and removed from office. At the end of the day, what we really want to see is a transparent, fair hearing of the facts, of the details, and a vote arrived to without a predetermined bias one way or the other. So we will keep abreast of that. We will keep you informed, you know, week over week as it progresses. But anticipate that at some point in the coming weeks or maybe longer, this process will go forward. So that was kind of the big story of 2019. Although there were a lot of other things going on, particularly at the federal level, you know, involving various members of the administration, but also down into the local level with some things that happened in the midterm elections, which happened in 2018 and took effect in 2019 in many areas. You know, for example, the state of Virginia completely flipped its government and leadership from being a quote-unquote red state to being a quote-unquote blue state by virtue of the Democrats winning both houses of legislature as well as the governorship. Similarly, in Kentucky, the governorship changed hands after a disputed election result where the Democratic candidate for governor was declared the victor. Now, that one still may not quite yet be over, but I think it's pretty much done as far as all the counting has to go. You know, in addition to that, there are a lot of state and local initiatives that came out. We are now up to, I believe it is 11 states that have legalized the recreational use of cannabis in their states. There are a number of initiatives that overrode some federal mandates on funding of projects that were beneficial to poor and disenfranchised communities. There were just a whole range of elected officials and governorships that changed hands from one party to another, either from Democrat to Republican or vice versa. So, I mean, it has been a very exciting political, mechanical year in politics in our country. And 2020 looks like it's going to continue that tradition with a few more flavors thrown into the mix, which we're going to talk about a little bit right out here in the first episode of the year, and that we're going to follow throughout the course of the year. And one of the first ones of those that I want to talk about is the ongoing struggles with voter suppression. We learned from statistics last year that a total of some 17 million voters have been purged from the voter registration polls across the country in various states over the course of the last year to year and a half, 2 years. And many times it is merely that these voters had not exercised their rights over the past election cycles, or there may have been some other reasons or intentions to, limit or restrict access to the polling places by certain groups. And among those, obviously poor people, African-American, Hispanic, Latinx, and, Native American populations are disproportionately being removed from the voter rolls by state governments. This has ranged, as I said, from merely, clearing out people who have not voted in, several years to a more egregious and more, intrusive methods of just identifying communities and finding ways to either eliminate them from the voter polls, relocate voter polling places, introduce new standards in order to vote. One such case in Florida, the state of Florida instituted a law where felons who had completed their sentence, had completed their, basically paid their debt to society, would regain the right to vote automatically once they had crossed that milestone. That was put in place by the people. The legislature subsequently came around and instituted a law that said, okay, you can do that, but you need to pay any restitution, fines, penalties, fees, or whatever before your right to vote will be restored. And that's contrary to how it is written, you know, in our Constitution, in our laws, that, you know, while a felon may or may not be stripped of their citizenship rights, including the right to vote, once they have completed their debt to society, then, you know, that right, among others, should be automatically restored. And, you know, in a prior episode, we talked about this. You know, there are 48 states that have some form of restriction from mild to severe on the voting status of, you know, convicted felons, serving felons, and, you know, former felons who have completed, you know, their service to society. And, you know, this is something that is an ongoing battle. It's something that we will continue to monitor and keep track of as we go forward through this year. And we'll keep you informed as to how that battle is shaping up and where we're headed in that. But it does point out something that we do need to be attuned to is, you know, are states, you know, finding new ways or expanding whatever existing ways they have on the books to unfairly exclude voters from the polls. Now, I should caveat that by saying, you know, there are circumstances where, you know, restrictions on your citizenship rights are properly and rightly restricted based on, you know, the crime that you may or may not have committed, and the, you know, the outcome of that and your status as a former felon. For example, if you look at, you know, sex offenders, once they've completed their jail time or their prison time, once they've done their parole or probation, there's still new requirements placed on them in terms of registering their status as a registered sex offender. And there are restrictions on where they may or may not live. You know, various geographies have notification protocols that must be followed, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, obviously some restrictions, some limitations based on, you know, what the circumstances are may be warranted. However, there are others that, you know, are part of our rights as citizens that should be automatically reinstated once that debt to society has been paid. And, you know, as in the case in Florida, you know, what happens with that subsequent legislation on, you know, repaying any monetary debts that are still outstanding, which could be considered a form of a poll tax, you know, is something that will be will probably end up in court and be adjudicated at that level. Keep in mind that, you know, the Republican administration back during the time of President Obama's term in office instituted some drastic setbacks and removal of elements of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which, you know, put in place restrictions that said states could not enact policies that impacted, you know, access to exercising your right to vote, particularly among, you know, disenfranchised communities. And, you know, that that required them to seek federal approval of such laws before they could be enacted. And that, among other pieces of the Voting Rights Act, were stricken out through the House of Representatives and the Senate at the federal level, basically softening that law and removing many of the teeth in that law that helped hold states, particularly those of the so-called former Confederate states where this was most rampant, from enacting those restrictions. So, you know, these kinds of things just point out what we say on this show quite frequently, that you have to find the truth, you have to seek it out, you gotta do your diligence, get informed, dig deeper, dig wider, get the facts. Don't just accept what comes to you from, you know, one media source on one side or the other side, or, you know, a 140 character tweet or whatever. When something, you know, doesn't seem right, or something that you believe in and want to support, make sure you do your diligence. Make sure you get all the facts. So, you know, that was kind of how 2019 went. And that's a very, very thin slice of the news articles regarding, you know, the political system that, you know, transpired in 2019. To go through any, you know, a significant number of them, I could probably be on the mic and talking for a week straight. But we'll get through a lot of these over the course of the coming year. We're going to be taking the show into a much more intense look at how the political process is laid out, how it's executed, you know, what's going on, what are the options we can do either in support of what's happening or in opposition to it, and how we make that happen. We're also going to be taking a look at, you know, more deeply into the local politics. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to ignore the fact that this is an election year, and in November we are going to have probably one of the most, if not the most important, presidential level elections probably in the last 40 years going on, and something that we are going to need to pay very close attention to and keep track of. And we're going to talk about many elements of this over the coming weeks. I already started with shows that we had in the end of last year. We're going to continue that going forward. So be aware that that's coming. Also be aware of any local elections. We're going to talk about those as well, and what we need to do as citizens in order to make sure that we are, in fact, being engaged, being aware, being informed, and most importantly, that we let our elected officials up and down the line, from dog catcher to president, let them know that we are A, that we are watching them, B, that we are engaged with the issue, and see that we have expectations and will hold them accountable for actions that do not meet our reasons as the people that voted them into office. And if they're not meeting those reasons, we have a very, very good remedy for that. It's called an election, and we can vote them out. So then we have what's going on in our political process now is the run-up to the presidential elections and these elections happening in November of this year. And, you know, as we've seen and as we're going to talk about, this has become a controversial process in and of itself, but even taking into account the people who have come into and gone out of the Democratic side of the presidential election. And we're going to talk about that in as we move into this in more detail. So as we think about this, believe it or not, if we go back to, you know, even 2015, 2016, you know, and then 2018, the Democratic presidential field, you know, and as is the case in our system, when one party is in power, typically they don't have a set of primaries and, you know, preliminary elections and caucuses and so forth, because their candidate is, you know, the sitting president of the United States. It is the party that's out of power that is the one that is seeking to unseat the incumbent, and they're the ones that have the, you know, primary races, you know, much like we're seeing with the Democratic Party through 2019 and now into 2020. And, you know, in this presidential cycle, one of the interesting things is that there were actually so many Democratic candidates. At one time, there was a total of 29 individuals running for president in the United States. Now, over the course of the last 12 to 18 months, 15 of those candidates have dropped out. And, you know, side note, you know, as I've said with this show, I generally don't talk about individual politicians unless they're, you know, they are directly related to the story. So in this case, you know, we are going to actually name some names. You know, in the current crop of active Democratic presidential candidates, you know, we have, you know, former Vice President Joe Biden, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg, who is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, John Delaney, former Maryland state representative, Tulsi Gabbard, who is a congresswoman from Hawaii, and Amy Klobuchar, senator out of Minnesota, Deval Patrick, who is the former governor of the state of Massachusetts, Bernie Sanders, who is a senator from the state of Vermont, Tom Steyer, who is a businessman and billionaire, Elizabeth Warren, who is also a senator from the state of Massachusetts, Marianne Williamson, excuse me, who is a author based out of California, Andrew Yang, who is an entrepreneur, who is from Manhattan, New York, and Michael Bennett, who is a state senator out of Colorado. Up until recently, we had Kamala Harris, who was a senator from California, and Julian Castro, who was the former Housing and Urban Development Secretary in the Obama administration. Kamala Harris dropped out just at the start of December, and Julian Castro dropped out on January 2nd of this year. There have been a number of individuals who were candidates. You know, as I said, there were 15 of them in total, including former New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, Seth Moulton, who is a Massachusetts representative, John Hickenlooper, who was a former Colorado governor, Kirsten Gillibrand, who was a New York senator, Eric Swalwell, who is a congressman from California, Jay Inslee, who is the governor of the state of Washington, and Mike Gravel, who was a senator, a former senator, rather, from the state of Alaska, Joe Sestak, who was a former Pennsylvania state representative, and Wayne Messam, who was the mayor of Miramar, Florida, Beto O'Rourke, who was a state of Texas representative, and Tim Ryan, who was a representative from the state of Ohio. So we had a huge field of Democratic candidates, which also followed up, by what we saw in 2016 when the Republicans were running for office. And in that campaign, we had, Dan, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. We had 17 candidates in the Republican campaign in 2016, including, you know, a couple of senators, a mayor, a businessman, actually Donald Trump, who was a, you know, wealthy businessman who actually ended up becoming president, Mike Huckabee, former governor, and Rick Santorum. You know, so there were a whole bunch of people running in 2016 as well. And it raises the question, and my question is this: is this the best process that we have for, you know, electing the highest offices in our country? And when we come back from break, we're going to take our first break right here. And when we come back, we're going to dig into this a little bit. I think we can do better than this. There are some things that happen in these primaries and, you know, in these run-up campaigns, then some things that, you know, we really should talk about in terms of how this process is managed, whether it's the Republican National Committee or the Democratic National Committee. Are they leaving, the question that it raises is, are they leaving valuable questions and discussions on the table? So when we come back from break, we're going to pick up on that, and also we're going to talk about another big thing that is going to be happening in 2020, and that is the census of the United States. So we're going to take our break. You're listening to Fired Up. My name is Steve. We'll be right back after this musical break.
They've been using this system to wield their power.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a slippery slope to teach their children, to teach your children to respect something that shows no respect. For lack of better terms, you know what I mean? You either a good thing on the ESN for educating the youth early and often about relationships going forward.
And we're back. You're listening to Fired Up on WJMS Radio. This is Steve. I'm your host. And thank you for staying tuned and staying with us as we start off our 2020 talking about the issues that carried over from 2019 and some of the things that are coming down the pike toward us rapidly in 2020. We left off talking about the Democratic presidential campaign process that we are currently involved in, and by extension, what transpired in 2016 with the Republican campaign. And with both of these systems, in my opinion, I think there's a fundamental flaw in how we elect our president and how these committees, the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee, actually run these events, these processes. Right now, the people that end up remaining in the race, in the hunt, are, you know, either the ones that have, number one, high name recognition, number two, likability to the base and to the potential voters in the party in question, and number three, who has the most money to stay in the race. Now, you know, that's maybe all well and good. I don't think so. I think there are better ways that we could do it. But one of the things that most concerns me and what I see, in particular, the recent departure on the Democratic side by Kamala Harris and by Julian Castro, illustrated how candidates that have, you know, very, very interesting and, you know, attractive policies and platforms end up being, you know, shoved out of the race, either because, you know, as in the case with the Democratic process this year, in order to be on the high visibility, you know, televised debates, you had to have, for the last one example, you had to have 200,000 individual donors and have scored 4 percentage points or more in, you know, one or more recent national polls in order to be counted among the candidates that would appear on the nationally televised debate. You know, and as I said, you know, this process may seem, you know, it may seem fair in some ways, but what it really does, in my opinion, is it excludes and pushes out people who have legitimate concerns and legitimate platforms and programs and plans and things that they want to do that should be under consideration by all of the Democratic candidates. Julian Castro had a very wide range of positions that he established and published on, you know, what his thinking was, and, you know, should he become elected president, how he would, you know, run, you know, the government and do the things that the president is supposed to do. Same thing with Kamala Harris. Same thing with, you know, other candidates that have recently left the race due to the fact that either they couldn't meet the donor limit or they couldn't meet the polling threshold, you know, or, you know, their name recognition and people knowing who they are and what they stood for just didn't get enough of the message out there so that, you know, it becomes part of the discussion. At the end of the day, you know, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, whichever party is running for office. And this applies also, by the way, down into your local races as well. Whichever of these candidates, you know, ends up being the eventual front runner or the eventual nominee, really should have some mechanism for bringing, you know, these important platform issues, these important, you know, concerns that represent, you know, what the majority of real people in America are thinking. There needs to be a mechanism to get that incorporated into the eventual nominee's platform so that, you know, this becomes part of the election discussion and part of the process and reasoning by which the eventual winner is selected. Now, I recognize that when, you know, these parties go into their conventions, and I believe the Democratic convention is in July this year, you know, there is a committee that puts together the platform of the party, that is what the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, you know, or the Independent Party or whatever parties are running, you know, have a nominee for the office of president and on down, what these parties stand for. And what I have seen in the past and what I have observed in the past is that not all of these really good, solid, sound ideas for, you know, the direction that our country needs to go in, whichever party we're talking about, not all of these make it into the final party platform due to, you know, whatever the closed door, the negotiations, you know, the games, whatever the game is, you know, at the convention level when these items are put together. A lot of these really, really sound ideas of things that, you know, should be done and things that could improve conditions for, you know, many, many Americans, just don't make it into that final cut for the party platform. So, you know, what I'd like to see, and again, this is my opinion, I'll post this as a question, you know, in my Twitter feed, is, you know, how can the political parties revise their process so that, you know, sound and ideas that resonate with the people, even if the candidate doesn't, can get serious consideration by the party in some, you know, form or fashion that brings them to the party platform in the election. I think it would be very beneficial if, you know, the ideas that a Kamala Harris or, you know, a Kirsten Gillibrand or, you know, even, you know, a Bill de Blasio, you know, any of the candidates that, you know, just could not keep up the pace in order to stay in the race, yet their ideas, their proposals that have merit need to have some way of getting serious consideration by the party in the final outcome. Now, you know, we could get involved and make sure that when, you know, our delegates are being selected and when, you know, the people that we send to the convention, that they are aware and are armed with the things that, you know, we would like to see that may have come from these candidates. But in any event, there's got to be a way that we can get these ideas out of, you know, the campaign and into the final, you know, head-to-head campaign, to make them points that the eventual winner will need to address as part of what they will do when they get in office. We'll have more discussion on this as we process through the year, as more of the platform components of the remaining candidates get more and more attention and more detail. In a related manner, one of the other things that does concern me is, you know, and again, this goes to those three categories I said, you know, the likability, the, you know, of the candidate, is it is nice when the candidates for office are representative of the constituents. You know, when we had, you know, when this current crop of candidates on the Democratic Party were coming out, and we had so many of them, we really had a broad cross-section of what this country looked like. We had, you know, white males, we had white females, we had females of color, we had males of color, we had, you know, a whole range. All, just about everybody had a seat at the table with one or more of the candidates that were in. As we've gone through the process, what has happened is the candidates that have fallen off the active list, a lot of them, you know, represent a lot of the diversity of our country. And what we're left with is a feel that while there is some, you know, racial and ethnic diversity and some gender diversity, and, you know, and so forth, it's still not a broad cross-section of the electorate. And if you look at the highest ranking, the top four candidates in the Democratic side of the process that we're going through right now, they all represent, you know, basically Caucasian people, male and female. You know, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, and, you know, and Bernie Sanders. You know, the candidates of color and other female candidates aren't in that top tier. And again, if they're not in that top tier, if they're not making that televised debate, if they're not getting the donations to get their message out, then, you know, it's sort of a self-defeating prophecy. You know, so it's something that, you know, we'll talk about as we go through the course of this very, very tumultuous year, 2020, as we work our way toward the convention in the summertime and then, you know, the election in November. So, you know, and again, I will post the question on my Twitter feed, and, you know, please, you know, go check out my Twitter, and it's at R, the letter U, fired up, all one word, and that's on Twitter. And, you know, check in, chime in, give me your thoughts, tweet back, and, you know, let's have a discussion, you know, in Twitter that we can then bring into the platform here. So that's my thoughts on the political process that we are in the middle of. So let's change gears a little bit. Let's talk to another very big, very important issue that will be facing us as we go through this year, 2020, the first new year, you know, this new year and the first year of the new decade. One of the things that occurs every 10 years in a year that ends in zero is the federal government does the census. And the census is the count of every person living in the United States. You know, and it has not been without controversy this year, this cycle either. The Trump administration wanted to add a question to the census requiring people to state whether or not they are a United States citizen. Now, the census counts people who are not only, you know, United States citizens, but resident aliens, and, you know, as well as, you know, immigrants who are here both legally and illegally. And the idea is the census is intended to count every resident of the country. And there are important reasons why that needs to happen. First and foremost is it is the role of the census to enable the states to then determine what the number of people in the districts that make up the federal House of the Congress, the House of Representatives, those numbers, how many representatives you have, is based on the number of people that are counted in your state by the census every 10 years. Now, so once that the census is completed and the count is in, then the process begins to reapportion how many people live in each state. And, you know, we'll see the media come out with it, you know, as to which states gained the most population, which states lost the most population, and so forth. It is those ultimate populations of the states that are divided up so that the 435 congressmen all represent the same number of people. Now, if you think about that, that's a very fair approach, and that was laid out by the founders in the Constitution. So when you look at it in practical reality, what you end up with is that some states have a very low number of representatives, either due to their physical size, for example, the state of Rhode Island, and you know the District of Columbia, have a very small number of representatives because the population in their state or in the district is small. Other states like California have dozens and dozens and dozens of districts because they have so many people there. Same thing with New York. Same thing with Michigan and other states in our country where there are population centers concentrated. The number of representatives needed so that each representative has the same number of constituents is determined by simple math. Now, what happens is how those districts are constructed is where, some of the controversy that has grown has come from. For example, in an earlier episode, and actually in the first episode of the Fired Up show, we talked about something called gerrymandering. And gerrymandering is where the party that wins the majority in a state, and that is they have control of the state legislature and the state senate and the governor's house, they get to divide up their state into districts for the federal congressional representation. Now, when gerrymandering is applied, what that means is that the state that wins the majority, they get to draw the districts any way they want. And what has happened over the decades is that the parties in power, and both sides do this. So, if the Democrats take over and, after 2020, then a lot more blue districts will pop up once the reapportionment is done. They draw districts where their party has the majority representation. That means that that congressperson that represents that district will be either Democrat or Republican based on which party won that state. So, if there are mechanisms in place, and this is kind of what we've talked about as I've laid up the, the underlying strategies, in the political system, in, the driving forces behind voter suppression, behind a lot of the issues we saw in the last 3 years with the vote, what happens is there are things that are done to make sure that, one party has a lock on a district for a long time and, doesn't necessarily equally represent, all of the people that are in that district simply because they won the state. Now, the founders intended that each congressional representative would have an equal number of constituents. And it's the purpose of the census to start this process, and the states then finish it up by dividing and creating districts, that represent an equal number of constituents for each representative they have. So what will come out of the census will not only be, new districts, but it could also mean a shift in the number of seats in the House of Representatives at the federal level. If a state loses a significant portion of its population, then they could see a reduction in the number of representatives that they have in Congress. And if a state has a significant gain in the number of residents, they could get additional representatives. And oftentimes what this means is that there ends up being runoff elections where an incumbent representative has to rerun for their seat because it has been redistricted and either eliminated or a district has been added. So, that creates, a reshaping of what the House of Representatives look like. But that's just the biggest part of what the census does, besides counting how many people are here. Additionally, the census is vitally important because it also determines where federal dollars are spent for things like services for the elderly, new roads and rebuilding, you know, infrastructure, new schools. If you know, the number of children in a district, you know, has grown significantly, then new schools have to be built. And it contributes to neighborhood improvements, you know, even down to, you know, trash pickup and all kinds of federally funded programs that go into the communities. And it goes into public health efforts. So, you know, the idea of the public health departments that provide, you know, free high blood pressure screenings and all of these services that are so desperately needed by the local residents, these all come from money that's appropriated based on what happens with the census. So what does all this mean? All this means that it is very important. It is extremely important that every 10 years that we get everyone counted. And, it, you know, each census cycle, the same kind of arguments arise. A lot of people don't think the census is all that important. Well, as I just said, in the list of things I just identified, it's critically important to key services that the government provides that a lot of residents in communities across the country need. You know, it also goes into transportation, you know, public busing and so forth. These are all vitally important. And, you know, we need to make sure that an accurate account is done so that, you know, the right number of people are counted when these dollars are appropriated. Now, the other big concern, and, you know, in the era that we live in right now, you know, with the issues around immigration and status and so forth, a lot of people are hesitant to take the part in the census because they think that it is going to identify them if there is some question about their legal status in this country. Now, you know, the census spends a lot of money in advertising and communicating out that this is absolutely not the case. The census is anonymous. There is no information about who you are, you know, as a person, you know, that is, you know, identifiable. There's no information on there that can be identified to you as an individual, although it does show an address. But by law, this information also cannot be used against you. All right. So, you know, please get the message out. You know, if there's, you know, a mixed citizenship household, you know, if it's your house or if it's, you know, family member's house, they need to accurately assess that household as part of the census so that we clearly get, you know, the appropriations done. The census has gone to great lengths to address language. You can respond to the census. There are census questionnaires in 12 languages in addition to English. They cover the gamut of languages. You can respond online. There is a American Sign Language video that asks you the questions to help with your online responses. So if you are hearing impaired, you can go to the census.gov website. You can fill out your census form, and there is a video where the questions will be asked you in ASL. You can also respond by phone in English or, again, in any of the 12 additional languages, or by TDD for those who are, you know, hard of hearing that have the telephone device. And there is a toll-free number that you can call. And, of course, there is the paper questionnaire. So the key thing, and we'll bring this up as we jump into our call to action segment in a moment, is, you know, responding to the census. It is, you know, it is critically important. It is something we have to do in order to get an accurate count of who is in America, you know, who you are. And, you know, what your race or ethnicity is. These are important numbers that go into figuring help and assistance that comes down to the community level. So your cities and towns are depending on you to give accurate data so that they can appropriately apply for all of the federal dollars that they are entitled to. All right. So as I said, we'll pick this up in our call to action segment right after we do our next break, you know, and let's talk about how we can make this happen. So you're listening to Fired Up. This is Steve. Thank you for being tuned in. You're listening on WJMS Radio. We'll be right back with our call to action segment after we do the break.
If you hear this message, wherever you stand, I'm calling every woman, calling every man. We're the generation, we can't afford to wait. The future started yesterday, and we're already late. We've been looking for a song to sing. We search for a melody, search for someone to lead. We've been looking for the world to change. If you feel the same, then go on and say, if you're out there, sing along with me. If you're out there, I'm dying to believe that you're out. Stand up and say it loud if you're out there. Tomorrow's starting now. No more broken promises, no more call to war. Unless it's love and peace that we're really fighting for. We can destroy hunger, conquer hate, put down the arms and raise your voice. We're joining hands today.
This is the show Fire It Up. Happy New Year. Welcome to the first show of the new year, 2020. And we're going to jump right into our call to action. So we'll carry forward, you know, our standard calls to action. Number one, you know, this is an election year. So let's make sure that we are getting out there, getting the information we need. Go to www.vote.org. Find out your local polling place. find out what you need to get registered officially if you're not, and to make sure that your voter registration is current and up to date if you are registered. And let's make sure that we get out there and vote when the local elections and the national election happens at the end of the year. Also, let's make sure that you are digging into what the issues in your local area are that concern you, and that you're communicating these to your local, your state, and your federal representatives. They work for us. We need to make sure that they understand what we want them to do, and that we will hold them ultimately accountable for it at the ballot box. Second one, obviously, is once you've got that in place, let's make sure that we get out to vote and that we get everybody we can out to vote. So, our call to action for this first episode, and we're going to pick up where we left off talking about the census data, is how vitally important it is not to be, number one, afraid of completing the census data form, or having fear that, you can't count people, in your household or in your community because there may be a question on their, immigration status. The key is to get everybody counted. It goes to how many representatives we have in Congress in Washington. It goes to how much money gets appropriated back to the states based on their population each year. And, that goes to feed schools and roads and healthcare and transportation and just so many things where the dollars are based on how many people there are in a given area. It is, in fact, a numbers game. And, lastly, understand that the results of the census last for 10 years. So the next census won't be until 2030. And, that means whatever results come out of the 2020 census, we will have to live with that for 10 years. So please make sure, as important as it is to get out and vote, it is equally, if not more important, to get out that census form and get it back and accurately filled out. I urge you to do that. We're going to talk about this more as we go through the year. So the last thing I want to kind of bring out for our call to action really isn't a call to action for you guys. It's a call to action for me and team here at Fired Up. And that's kind of to give you what we're going to be looking at as we go into 2020, as we produce our show each week. There are a few things that are going to change with the show, and I believe they are good things. Right now our show is in a podcast only format. One of the things that we're looking to do is to explore the options of going to a video and podcast format. Right now several of the shows here on WJMS Radio utilize the Get Vocal platform as part of their overall broadcasting to give not only an audio version of the show, but also an audio and video version of the show. So we will be exploring that option as we move forward. Stay tuned. There will be news coming about that as we bring that closer and closer to reality. Another thing that's going to be happening with the show is our physical facility is going to get some upgrading done. Number one, to improve the sound quality. Number two, we're going to expand some of the technology. And one of the reasons I want to do this is I want to, open up the opportunity to bring in guests, to bring in people to interview, whether it's, to talk about, the political system at the national level, the state level, the local level. To do that, we've already made some outreach to some local politicians, and they're very interested in the idea. So we want to be able to accommodate bringing guests into the show, and the best way to do that and the most professional way to do that is to make a few technological advances here in our studio, and also to improve the overall sound quality as well. The final thing is we are going to be launching out probably later on in the first quarter. Our website will go live. Now, just so you know, there is a website for the show that is built and maintained by, you know, the WJMS team. And, you know, shout out to Jamie. Shout out to the interns that work behind the scenes and keep all of the shows here on WJMS Radio, you know, up and running, you know, walking tall, standing tall, looking good. And, you know, if no one else is saying it to you guys, I'm saying it. We really appreciate all the work that you do. It does not go unnoticed. So, you know, the website that we are looking to build is a more political based website, which, you know, where we can talk about things that may not meet, you know, the WJMS radio criteria, and not wanting to have them run afoul of their licensing and other agreements, we will have a standalone page coming down the road. And it's really going to kind of tie together both our Facebook page, our Twitter page, and, you know, our social media outreach. It will just be another way to get information out to you. So I will keep you informed about that as it comes along. And then finally, you know, we really just want to really encourage, you know, you, the listener, to engage with us. Right now, you can reach out to me on Twitter, and I am at R, the letter U, fired up, all lowercase. You can also email me at firedupradio@yahoo.com, and that's all one word. And as I said, you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/firedupradio. So there are ways for you to engage with us, and I really would love to hear your thoughts. And as I said, I'm going to be posting, you know, information about the census. I'm going to be posting information about the democratic process, the election process, not the candidates, but how the process works and things that, you know, maybe we want to have a discussion of in a broader sense, you know, online. And it's also where I post links to valuable resources. And, you know, this will also be a part of the webpage in a more permanent fashion and easier to access and navigate with resources for voting, for, you know, polling place, for surveys, for data, for news, for information. That I find as part of my research, I will share with you through, you know, through my Facebook page and through my the web page to come. So, you know, I'm really, really excited about 2020. I enjoy doing this show. I think and I hope that it is something that you find useful. If you do, I'd really, really like it if you, you know, reach out on my Twitter page and let me know what you think. You know, hit that like button on, you know, on Facebook, you know, subscribe, let's get a dialogue going beyond just what you hear from me each Monday. And, you know, let's make it two way. I'd love to hear your feedback and thoughts on what we can do to make the show better, what we can bring to the forefront to talk about. Maybe there's a local issue in your area that has a broader national implication. Let's talk about it. Let's go after that. Let's find it. Let's, you know, dig deeper, dig wider, as I always say. You know, so that's the call to action for this week. We'll wrap it up as we always do. And I did get one question, just out of curiosity. Somebody asked me about the exit music, and it's by David Bowie, and it's a song called "This Is Not America," and they asked why I had that there. And really, it's there because I want people to understand that what we are going through in this country right now, this is not America. This is not the America our founders dreamed. This is not the America that so many of our, you know, precious treasure has spilled blood and given lives to defend, protect, and advance. So, you know, what we have right now is transitory. We will get through. We will persevere. America will be back, and you know, we will survive. We will come alive again, more alive than we are right now. So again, our current situation, no, this is not America. Everybody take care. Welcome into the new year. I look forward to what we've got coming down the road. I think it's going to be an exciting year. You're listening to Fired Up. My name is Steve. This is WJMSradio.com, and let's have a great year. Thanks, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.